Good morning.
Good morning.
I kind of had an interesting thought this morning when I handed my notes to the Jisha and then came in and did the bows, and so I didn't have my notes. And, you know, there's no reason to believe that the Jisha would lose track of my notes in between the door and here. But I did have, for some reason, sort of this momentary thought, like, where are my notes? And it kind of made me appreciate the form of giving the notes to the Jisha, and then the Jisha giving the notes back to me, because they're not really mine anyway. So whatever ideas I might have that I think are mine really are completely interdependent with many other ideas and people and activities. So anyway, I was sort of appreciating that little ceremony of giving and receiving the notes. So let's see what's here. Oh, yes. Well, first thing that's here is a reminder to myself. I mentioned last night about how wonderful it is to be here together with everyone and all the sanghas coming together. You know, officially, this is a joint session of Compassionate Ocean Dharma Center and Clouds and Waters Zen Center. But I also mentioned that we have Mountains and Water Sangha. Vairochana Farm is part of that as well. So, and I forgot Dharma Dance is another. So maybe there's others that there's other streams that are coming in, and certainly people, even if they are members of those named sanghas, may have practiced at other places, well, even non-Buddhist places, and have a, you know, a spiritual thread that they're bringing in. And so it's really wonderful that we can be together like this. So a common theme that we've had for the past, whatever, 10 years or more, where we've done this joint Rohatsu session with the Compassionate Ocean and Clouds and Water, our overall theme is the teachings of Katagiri Roshi. Of course, that's pretty broad, but nevertheless, that's our theme. And in particular, I want to look at, I think my two talks are going to be based on some information from this book, Each Moment is the Universe, which is Katagiri's teachings on being time. So, and I thought that really related to the topic of the season, which is Buddha's enlightenment. So that's what I'd like to share today. So there's a chapter in this book, chapter 18, called Practice and Enlightenment. So I thought I would just share some of Katagiri's words and then share some of my own thoughts. So Katagiri says, our usual understanding of enlightenment is that if we practice zazen, we will become an enlightened person as a result. We think of enlightenment as a doorway to reach a goal. Reach nirvana as soon as possible in order to satisfy human curiosity and desire. But that can make us very short-tempered. We cannot live in peace with a feeling of security. We don't know how, because we don't base our lives on direct experience of real peace. This is a human problem. So I was struck by this phrase, direct experience of real peace. So what is that? We can't even really talk about it. Direct experience of real peace. So we can't really even talk about it, but it's something that we can do here in Sishin. We can practice it. So that's one of the wonderful things about coming together in Sishin. So Katagiri goes on to say, enlightenment is a state in which we are exactly one with the truth and see the ultimate nature of existence. When you really see time, you are present from moment to moment, and a huge magnanimous world comes up. Whether you have experienced this or not, whether you are conscious of it or not, you already exist right in the middle of this magnanimous world. Now, can we really receive that and believe it? Whether you have experienced this or not, whether you are conscious of it or not, you already exist right in the middle of this magnanimous world. You are already an enlightened person because you are alive. You exist at the intersection of time and space. Your intellectual understanding cannot penetrate this, but through spiritual practice, you can see it. When you see the original face of a moment, it is exactly nothing. But that nothing is very strong and vigorous, very active and energetic. Even though you don't know that this is life, it is why you survive. It makes you vividly alive. So there's a lot there, but there's this line, your intellectual understanding cannot penetrate this, but through spiritual practice, you can see it. For many of us, we're very tripped up by this, wanting to have this intellectual understanding and not having any idea what it means to see something without intellectual understanding. But that's really what direct experience is about. There's no overlay of an intellectual understanding. So now, spiritual practice is the key. He says, through spiritual practice, you can see it. So that's what we're here for. I mean, we can do spiritual practice all the time, but because we need a little extra help, we're here in Sishin. I like to say that, I know I've said this before, that it might not be the reason that everyone becomes a priest, but for me, I became a priest because I knew I needed a little extra help. I needed a little extra help with my practice, so I needed to have these robes on so that people would expect something of me, and then I would need to go forward with that. I would have that people's expectations helping me to do what I wanted to do anyway. So it's really important for us to look at what is it that we need to do in our practice. It's not the same for everyone. So for some people here today, maybe our task is we really need to focus our concentration. We really need to bring our best energetic effort forward with the intention of being present in each moment. So maybe that's, for some of us, maybe that's the way our practice will unfold this week. But for others, we might need to let go of our rigid effort and just enjoy being in the moment without trying to get anything. Of course, those who are focusing the concentration, hopefully you can focus it in a way where you're also not trying to get anything. But for some people, it's important to have a sort of strong intention, not a sort of strong, to have a strong intention of concentration. And also it can change from time to time. So what is it right now that you need? So for some of us, like I said, we need to just enjoy and let go of this rigid kind of effort. And I was thinking that probably if you got all excited when I said, bring out our best energetic effort, if you were thinking, yeah, that's really what I need to do, bring out the best energetic effort, it might be that you're a person who needs to let go. I'm not saying absolutely, but it might be. And if when I said, just relax and enjoy, and you said, oh, yes, that's the way, it might be that you're a person who needs at this moment to bring a little energy to your practice. So you can explore what you need to do for your practice right now. And you can always ask for help with one of the teachers if you're not sure, so that you have a chance to sort of explore together. You're not completely on your own. It is really important to determine what is it that I need in my practice right now. Because it does change from time to time. So it might be different even day to day in the session. But we have this session together and this wonderful opportunity to live together for this week. Katagiri says, the opportunity to live is something vigorous, like a leaping fish. That leaping fish is eternity. Is eternity something that exists forever? Well, this is a pretty good question. He says, yes, but eternity is not something fixed or absolute. So it exists forever, but it's not fixed or absolute. Eternity is leaping and alive, constantly changing. We cannot pin down exactly what it is, but we are alive because something supports our life and helps us live, something that exists always. This is called eternity or the absolute. Human beings are originally peaceful and harmonious because eternity is alive in our daily life. It is not a matter of metaphysical, philosophical, psychological, or religious understanding. It is fact. I love that. It is fact. It is fact that human beings are originally peaceful and harmonious because eternity is alive in our daily life. But we don't realize this. Isn't that right? Most of the time we don't realize this because we stumble over our feelings, emotions, and ideas. When we see human life only in terms of ordinary time, where everything is chopped into separate pieces, then our eyes aren't open to see life in terms of universal time, where we are interconnected and interpenetrated with all sentient beings. So, whatever we do in daily life, we have to make every possible effort to do it in peace and harmony with all beings. Whatever we do, We have to make every possible effort to do it in peace and harmony with all beings. So with this line, I was thinking about the protests outside the 4th Precinct House in Minneapolis. And the people who are longing for justice and respectful treatment. And they're doing something. And maybe sometimes they're in peace and harmony and sometimes they're not. And I think about, regardless of whatever the true story is around the death of Jamar Clark, we know that there is racism, unfair treatment, and actual harm to people of color going on in our police forces around the country. And, you know, there's not just harm going on in our police forces. There's many areas of society where racism is alive and well and where people are harming each other and people are being treated unfairly. So I think it's important to consider that being Buddhist does not mean that we just accept when people are being treated unfairly. Well, I should say, we can accept that it is happening, because it is happening. But that doesn't excuse us from looking deeply and seeing what is my response. What is the appropriate response? So we can work for justice. We can work to undo racism. We can work to protect the environment. But the really important thing is that we make every possible effort to do this work in peace and harmony with all beings. So no one is excluded from that. You know, the doing the work with in peace and harmony with all beings. So, for example, if we're suffering because of how we think Jamar Clark was treated, we can stand up on his behalf, but we need to do so in peace and harmony with the police, for example. And if we think the police did no wrong in this instance, maybe we want to speak and act in harmony with the protesters. So if we have a thought about what's going on, can we act and speak in peace and harmony with everyone? So I kind of continued in this train of thought. Okay, there's some horrible things happening. What about ISIS? Maybe we think there's something I could say or do that would help stop ISIS from continuing this reign of terror, and it really is terrible. So, can I speak and act about that, but in a way that's in peace and harmony with the people involved in ISIS? This is not easy. That's why we need to come away to Sesshin and practice. Because for most of us, it's like, or most of the time, we look at that and say, no, that is just impossible. There is no way to go forward in a path of what is wholesome and right and still be in peace and harmony with the people doing violence. How can it be possible to live like that? So that's what we come here to do in Sesshin, is to discover how it is possible to live like that. So what we do is very simple. We practice being in peace and harmony with the small things that come up in Sesshin. Like, I didn't get my favorite flavor of rice for breakfast, or my knee is hurting, or it's too warm in here, it's too cold in here. Whatever I don't like the schedule, or I like the schedule. What, you know, so as the different things come up, we take a breath And we ask ourselves, how can I live in peace and harmony with this being? With this thought, this idea, this difficulty, this preference? Especially with suffering, it seems a little bit easier to live in peace and harmony with the things we like. Though if we grab onto them, it's not exactly peaceful. But it's a little bit, we think that we're being peaceful with the things we like. But it's when the things we don't like, those are really our teachers. All right, let's see what else Category had to say. When your daily living becomes one with peace and harmony, all beings are absorbed into your life, and you become one with the original nature of existence. This is the manifestation of real peace. If you haven't experienced this, it seems to be abstract, but it's not abstract. There is nothing to conceptualize. And then he gives us some words about Zazen. Zazen is an opportunity to let go of conceptualized thought. When you sit down, let go of yourself and be free from the idea that you are someone who is doing Zazen. Then you become fluid and dynamic. When you practice like this, your Zazen arouses the way-seeking mind. That's that energy of practice, the way-seeking mind. And at the same time, the way-seeking mind causes you to practice. So first you practice, well, what comes first? We don't really know, but we say we practice, and that arouses the way-seeking mind, that energy. And then that energy also causes you to practice. So it's like a circle of practice. Then he says, practice is like a filter. On one side is everyday life, and on the other side is direct experience of reality. This filter is not merely a device. It must be functioning. Something must be going through it. I love this. This is not a matter of discussion. We must be alive. We must act. Then, Zazen, and I would say, and our everyday activities, pass through the filter of practice, and in the next moment, enlightenment appears. So practice is like a filter. So this metaphor was a little bit difficult for me. So I'll just say, for me, the metaphor that works a little bit better is that I, and the way I see it is more like a valve. So a valve that's just, you know, then opens up. So he says on the one side, what is it? On the one side is everyday life, and on the other side is direct experience of reality. But of course, these two aren't separate, but we see them as separate. There's like a valve that's closed, and so then practice is what opens the valve. There's the gate that's open. It opens that connection between everyday life and direct experience of reality. It allows us to see clearly that actually this idea of a valve even is just made up, that it's really, there isn't a valve. We can just take it away and say, here is everyday life, and at the same time, direct experience of reality. But most of the time, there is that filter there, and it's not getting through. And we have, here's our everyday life. And I want the direct experience of reality. Let me at it. And it seems like there's a filter there. There's something in the way. And practice just opens it. Through our spiritual practice, we experience wisdom, deeply seeing the truth of human life. Seeing eternity, Dharma, truth, or the source of existence is complete freedom. Then, when everyday life is based on wisdom, it is called nirvana. The way-seeking mind, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana are constantly going in a circle that is beginningless and endless. So the way-seeking mind, practice, enlightenment, nirvana, the way-seeking mind, practice, enlightenment, nirvana, going in a circle. They are nothing but being, nothing but time. This is called being time. Being time is a great device through which we can glance at the real self and come back to human life. So I also like this a lot, this come back to human life. So that's important. And I like that he said, we glance at the real self. It's like, don't keep looking there. Just glance at it, and then that's enough. We don't wallow in enlightenment. We breathe. We touch this vast eternal truth. And then right away we return to doing the most simple and mundane things. But of course now we can do them with a smile and with a feeling of deep peace that maybe we didn't have before. So the glancing is important too. But the coming back to human life is really where then we can become a bodhisattva. We can really do some very good things in the world. Enlightenment is not a particular state of mind that you perceive from a dualistic perspective. It is not something to try to get, something to be infatuated with, or something to stay with. We have to realize it, but enlightenment is beyond dualistic human perspective. I think he said that a couple times. It's like, get the point. It is seeing life from the universal perspective. We live in peace and harmony with all sentient beings without discrimination. So instead of expecting something from Zazen, just do Zazen with wholeheartedness. Then you can see the entire universe. That is egolessness. At that time, Zazen is seen from eternity, and the Zazen you do is manifested with the whole universe. This is real time, and this time is called enlightenment. So just do Zazen with wholeheartedness without expecting anything. So I think that's usually tricky. How to be wholehearted without expectation. So usually I think either we're wholehearted with expectation, like really doing something because this is going to get me that, or we're without expectation, but we're just kind of half-hearted. Like, all right, whatever. Right? That's the way I see it. Most sort of human activities are like that. So how to bring the acupuncture needle of effort to just the right spot? So this is really vital for us to consider, kind of like what I was saying at the beginning. What is it that we need to do in order to have wholehearted effort without expectation? Do we need to bring up the energy? Do we need to let go of our rigid way of practice? How can we get just in the right point? So that's really vital, no matter how many years we've been practicing or how few years we've been practicing. Where is that point right now, in this moment? And also, that's a way of learning to practice without ego, if we can practice wholeheartedly while letting go of expectation. Katagiri says, when egolessness comes up simultaneously with practice, practice is free from suffering. When egolessness comes up simultaneously with practice, practice is free from suffering. You become free from your own body and mind and experience complete spiritual security, stability, and imperturbability. This is called emancipation. Emancipation, the individual direct experience of human life, is the culmination of the quest. I just love these bells that we have going on. So nice. The individual direct experience of human life is the culmination of the quest. Sometimes we say this is realization or actualization. Actualization is not just the manifestation of your individual experience of the truth. It is your life interconnected with a tree's life, a bird's life, water's life, winter's life, autumn's life, the life of the whole universe, the life of the pinging radiators. Interconnected with the whole universe. So it's not just your individual experience of the truth. Sure, it includes your individual experience. It's not to say that's not important, but emancipation, freedom, enlightenment cannot happen to you alone. So these notes that I wrote that aren't mine came to me, and now I'm sharing them with you. They're not mine alone. And in this time of commemorating the Buddha's enlightenment, we can remember what he said at his enlightenment. I, together with all beings and the great earth, attain the way. He did claim his individual experience, I attain the way, but he also included I, together with all beings and the great earth. So that's great news. We're never alone. All right, I think I have time for the last paragraph of the chapter. Luckily, it's a short chapter. Buddhism teaches that all things, those we can see and those we cannot see, those we can think of and those we cannot think of, those we can imagine and those we cannot imagine, all things must be accepted as beings in Buddha's world. We should accept all beings and understand them, see where they come from, look at their face, and at the same time, we should be free from all things. So just accept all aspects of human life, whatever they are. This is called freedom. Freedom is not escape from suffering or escape from any of the various aspects of human life, but acceptance of their true nature as beings in the Buddha's world. So I think this line, we should accept all beings and understand them, see where they come from, look at their face. That's a beautiful instruction of how to live. Look at the face of each and every being that we encounter. And even if we can't look at their face because maybe they've rejected us or they hate us or they're far away, we can imagine looking into their face and seeing in their face the joys and sorrows that they experience, their suffering and their pain, the things that shaped their early years, all the things that have made them who they are today in this moment. So when we encounter beings in this way, we can live in harmony with all beings. We can suffer with them, and we can be free with them. So that's the letting go. At the same time, he said we should be free from all things. And then there's this other line, freedom is not escape from suffering or escape of it from any of the various aspects of human life, but acceptance of their true nature. So the true nature of suffering, the true nature of the various aspects of human life is beings in the Buddha's world. So any aspect of human life, any suffering that comes up, the true nature of that is that it's a being in the Buddha's world. And then, of course, if something comes up, like we perceive great harm being done, and then we have a feeling coming up like, I should find a way to stop this harm. That is a being in the Buddha's world too. So we can honor that being, but we don't use that being to fight and to beat up the other being, even the being that's causing harm. Instead, we look into their face. This is a being in the Buddha's world as well. So this is not necessarily easy practice. But here we have a great opportunity to do it in a safe and somewhat protected space. So let's do that. Let's practice with the various aspects of our human life that are coming up in Sesshin. So it can be something right here, very visceral, like physical pain, or it can be ideas about something that's happening in the outside world that's causing us suffering or difficulties. So then seeing the true nature of that, the true nature of everything that arises, that everything that arises is a being in the Buddha's world and has a place here. So that's my opening invitation to you for this session. Thank you very much.
May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are numberless.
Obstacle.